We'll start with the beginning of Parshas Vayechi. We know that in the very beginning of the Parsha, we discussed last time this issue that Parshas Vayigash runs right into Parshas Vayechi. And Rashi asks the question, Lama Parshas Ustuma? Rashi asks, why is this Parsha closed Parsha? And it says, because Shekivan Shenifter Yaakov Avinu Nistimu Einehem V'Libam Shel Yisrael Mitzaras Hashibut Sheishchilu L'Shabtam. Because once Yaakov Avinu passed away, the eyes and the hearts of the Jewish people became closed from the Tzaras Hashibut, from the suffering, the difficulties of the servitude, that they began to be enslaved by the Egyptians. So the question, I mean, we've discussed that in the context of the last pasuk in Parshas Vayigash, Ve'echa Zuba, Vayifru Vayivu, that Rav Schwab points out that it said that the land took hold of them. They were taken hold of by the land, The land, not that they inherited, took hold of the land. But the question on this famous Rashi is the fact that the Medrash seems to tell us elsewhere, and Rashi brings down actually in Parshas Va'era, the second Parsha in Shemos, that the Sheba, the enslavement, didn't start until when? The enslavement didn't start until the last of the Shvatim passed away. We know the last of the Shvatim, the last of the brothers to pass away was Levi. And Rashi quotes a Medrash in Parshas Va'era, Shekol Zman She'echad Min HaShvatim Kayim, Lo HaYeshibud. So what's going on here? Did the Sheba, the enslavement, start when Yaakov Avinu passed away? And that's why Parshas Vayigash runs right into Parshas Vayechi. And, just the other night after Mincha, we were trying to look up, and someone saw a letter in the Torah. They thought it was a problem, maybe. So we had to look at it, and you couldn't find where Parshas Vayechi started and Vayigash ended, because it really just runs one into the other. So which was it? When did the Sheba start? So Schwab takes a fascinating approach to this. And he points out that when Yaakov Avinu passes away, so we know there's a time of embalming, and he has a fascinating approach also, that Yosef has his father embalmed by the doctors of Egypt, not by the embalmers of Egypt, meaning they didn't do anything inside the body of Yaakov Avinu. They didn't cut him up. You think embalming, right? Embalming, what do? You open up, you take out organs, you inject chemicals. And that's why Yaakov had him embalmed by the Rofim, the doctors, not by the embalmers. So it's a fascinating, we're not going to get into the science shabbo of that, but we see that what happens is, Vayavri Yimei B'chiyaso, that after the days of crying for Yaakov Avinu, this is Perek Nun Pasuk Dalet, Vayidaber Yosef El Beis Paro Lemar, Yosef, page 284, Yosef speaks to the house of Paro saying, Imna Matzasi Chen Beinecha, If it pleases you that I find favor in your eyes, Dabruna, please speak, Ba'aznei Pharaoh Lamar, in the ears of Paro, saying that my father made me swear to bury him in Eretz Canaan. So Schwab asks a very simple question. I mean, the Medrash even says on this pasuk that Yosef didn't go to Paro directly. He asked, like, the chief of staff of the queen to speak to the queen, that she could speak to the king. And you're like, what happened to Yosef? He's Mishneh LeMelech Paro. He's the second to Paro. No one raises a hand in Egypt without Yosef's permission. What happened to him? What happened? The pasuk says, Biladoli Yerim Ishes Yadov Esar Glob B'chalers. No one could move a limb without Yosef. He's the Mishneh LeMelech, and now all of a sudden, the Mishneh LeMelech, the viceroy, the prime minister, the power behind the throne, is speaking like some petty servant. Please, if I find favor, please speak. What's going on? And Rav Schwab says, this is exactly what Rashi is talking about. That right after Yaakov Avinu died, the Shibud began. In what way do we see the expression of the Shibud? That right away, Yosef's a different Yosef. When his father passes away, after the 70 days of mourning for Yaakov Avinu, when it's time to take him to Eretz Canaan, to bury him in Kever Avos and Ma'aretz HaMachpelah, Yosef loses his koach HaMemshalah. He's still very wealthy, he's still an impressive person, but his gevura seems to have been gone. His gevura is gone. He's a different Yosef. He's no longer this very, very influential figure, this person that's in control of all of Eretz Mitzrayim. When he loses his father, he becomes subservient to Paro. And that, Rav Schwab says, is the Shibud that began with the death of Yaakov Avinu. Why that is, it's something to think about. Why did that happen, that after the death of Yaakov Avinu? And that's why Rav Schwab says that the Parsha is closed. Just like I couldn't find the beginning of Vayechi, this beginning of the Shibud was very, very difficult to pin down. It was very, very subtle that all of a sudden Yosef felt like he didn't have that power anymore without his father being alive. He felt like now he was subservient to Paro. He wasn't the one in control. And again, Schwab doesn't exactly say why that is. He said that all of a sudden now he's afraid to enter into Paro. We would imagine, well, Yosef would always walk into Paro whenever he wanted. He was, again, the person that was running the country. He was the one that we saw in Vayigash basically acquired the whole Egypt as personal vassals of Paro. He was the one that made Paro mamish in control of everything. And now when his father passes away, Yosef is nisht Yosef anymore. He's a different person. That's Shibud. The Shibud is maybe how we view ourselves. When we view ourselves as subservient, that Yosef all of a sudden doesn't have this ability to go in and to speak what he feels and to take a very proactive role, that was the Shibud. That's the Shibud right there. Yeah, Lonnie, you wanted to put...
No, I just think he was in the time for so long without Yaakov that I just find it a little interesting, like that. I understand, like, that his father passed away, but he was there for so long alone. So it just seems a little interesting that he doesn't have the confidence anymore.
Like, no, it is. And that's what Rav Schwab says. Again, maybe he got used to the fact that his father was there. The bracha ended because Yaakov Avinu came. Paro saw there was something amazing about Yaakov, right? That some say that, you know, a number of medrashim, that Paro set up his palace, that everyone had to bow to him coming in. When Yaakov Avinu was walking to Paro, the doorway raised up so Yaakov didn't have to bow going into Paro. Maybe Yosef thought that Paro recognized, oh, it's not really the son. Who's the real power? The father. He's this. You know, whatever it was, but somehow after Yaakov dies, Yosef like loses that givura. He loses that ability. And it's interesting because this is how Rav Schwab is defining Gullus. That the beginning of Gullus is where the Jew sees that we're not in control anymore. Meaning the very fact that Yosef has to go and beg of Paro, that shows that what? That we're not in control. And that is the tzara of the Shibud. That's where you really feel subservience. When we do not control our destiny. When Yosef can't go and just bury his father as he promised him. So that's Golus. That's Golus. Again, it wasn't enslavement. Jewish people were not being whipped. There wasn't backbreaking labor that they had to get up in all hours in the night. But when they lost self-determination, when Yosef didn't have the ability to be a moshel, to be a ruler anymore, the koach ha-memshala, Rav Schwab says, that power of control, when that memshala, malchus, you know, that ability to decide things, was taken away, and he was tola bedas acherim, he was now dependent on others, that is galus. That's what galus is. Again, why it happened to Yosef at this time, that's something that remains to be figured out and could certainly be discussed further. But we know that in the parsha also, we know that Yaakov is a little nervous when he asks Yosef to swear to him, right? And why is that? Why is he nervous? So we know it's Perek Memches, Pasuk Zayin, V'ani, Bivoi Mipadan, Mesa Alai Rachel, Be'eretz Kenan, page 270, Bederech, Ba'od Kivras Aretz Lava Efrasa, Vekthura Hashem, Bederech Efras, Hibes Lachem. And Yaakov tells Yosef that when I came from Padan Aram, when I was coming back to Eretz Kenan, on the way to Efrasa, which is Efras, Hibes Lachem, I was on my way to Efrat, which is Beit Lechem, Rachel Imenu died. Yeah? So what does that mean? What's going on? Rashi says, Va'adni Bevoi Mipadan, right? That even though I'm asking you to bother to bury me to all the way to bring me back to Eretz Yisrael, and I didn't do this for your mother, I buried her on the way close to Beis Lachem. The bottom line in Rashi, the last words, Halachtia filu lebeis lechem. Lo halachtia filu lebeis lechem. Lachnisa la'aretz. V'yadati sheyesh belibcha alai. Aval dalecha shal pia dibur kvar tiyasham. And just know that I buried her mamish on the way. Even to Beit Lechem I didn't bring her in. Mamish like on the way. Right? And I know that you might have something in your heart against me, but know that I did this al pia dibur. I did this based upon divine instruction. Why? Shetela Ezra Labanehak, Sheyiglo Sam the Vuzaradon, for you over him derech sham, Yotz Rachel al Kivra Uboche Mevakeshes Alehem Rachim, Shenemer Kol Birama Nishma. Right? And so Rashi here quotes the famous Medrash Chazal that Yaakov Avinu is asking Yosef, right? That he wants him to bury him in Eretz Yisrael, and he says, "I understand that that there's going to be a little hesitancy because I didn't do that for your mother. I didn't take your mother and bury her in Maros HaMachpela in Chevron. I buried her mamish on the road. B'derech Efrasa hi beis lachem. But the interesting question is, you know what the problem with this is? This isn't where he asks him to bury him there." He asked him to bury him there in the very beginning of a parasha. Perek Mem Ches is Vahi Achrei Hadvarim Ha'ele Vayomer LeYosef Hine Avicha Chole. It's in the beginning of the parasha. Vayikru Yimei Yisrael Lamus, and he calls Yosef and he says, "Swear to me not to bury me in Mitzrayim. Please let me bury me with my avosai." And Yosef swears, "Anochi Esek Hadvarecha." Swear to me, he swears to him. So, but yet it's now Vayhi Acharei Hadvar Me'ila, when time passes, when he brings his sons, and all of a sudden he throws in this thing, Mamish, in the middle of the blessings to the sons. Right? And then when Mamish, he throws it in and then continues, Vayomer's Yosef, I love the Banayhem. He says, "Who are they?" And he says, "They're my sons." And then he brings them forth and the whole mixing up of the hands. 1 second, so it's totally out of place. Certainly the way that Rashi is explaining these psukim, this should be back where? This should be back in the very beginning of the parasha, when he actually made him take the oath. So you could just say that he's coming close to die. Okay, but it's mamish in middle of the brachos to Menashe and Ephraim. Why does the Torah put it smack in middle of the brachos of Menashe and Ephraim? It doesn't make any sense. So Rav Schwab says a beautiful, what a beautiful idea he has here. We have to say this because it's Asar B'Teves. We know Asar B'Teves, it's a fast day Tuesday. It's a fast day we spoke about that is Aschalta de Peronu, so we spoke about it on Shabbos. We spoke about it last week. It's the beginning of punishment. It's when Nebuchadnezzar began his siege on Yerushalayim, we said on Shabbos, from the Drashos Beis Yishai, Reb Shlomo Fisher, that it was also the day that Yosef was sold by his brothers, right? That's what he says. It's the real beginning of Peronus. So we have to talk about Geula, right? And we know that Yaakov, he wanted to talk about Geula a lot. And we know that he wanted to reveal the deepest secrets in this week's Parsha of Geula. And that was taken away from him, at least most of it. But Rav Schwab suggests that what Yaakov Avinu was doing over here, he was actually hinting to the two Mashiachs. I find it surprising that a lot of people don't know that they're going to be two Mashiachs, right? We all know Mashiach ben David. Ben Yavo ben David v'Yigalena. Let the son of David come and redeem us. Mashiach ben David. But we know there's also going to be a Mashiach ben Yosef. And Mashiach ben Yosef is going to come before Mashiach ben David. And he's actually going to be killed in war. And then Mashiach ben David is going to come and complete the redemption in the Gemara. And Sukkah talks about this in Nun Beis Amud Aleph, that that once Mashiach ben David sees Mashiach ben Yosef killed, that's when he's going to come forth. And where does Mashiach ben Yosef come from? Mashiach ben Yosef comes from Shevet Ephraim. And that's what the Pasuk in Yo, Lamed Aleph says, Ephraim Bechor Rihu, that Ephraim is my Bechor, Havin Yakir Li Ephraim, the beautiful Pasuk in when HaKadosh Baruch Hu expresses great yearning for Ephraim. So this is what Yaakov Avinu is hinting to over here. You know why Yaakov Avinu puts it over here? Because what was the pasuk before that? The two pasukim before that were about Ephraim and Menashe, Keruven v'Shimon Yuli. Umoladcha asher lata achariyam l'cha yu al shem achem yikaru b'nachalosam. understand that Ephraim and Manasseh are like Reuven and Shimon. They're taking portions in the land like everyone else. And Ephraim and Manasseh are like Reuven and Shimon. What does that mean about Ephraim? It means Ephraim is the Bechor. Ephraim is like the firstborn, right? He has that status. And therefore, as the firstborn of the Bnei Rachel, that's the status Ephraim has. So his Mashiach is going to come first. And what's his Mashiach going to do? His Mashiach, he's hinting it to in this pasuk. And this is why Rachel Imenu is buried on the road, Bederech Ephras, he Beis Lachem. Who came from Beit Lachem? Don't say the wrong answer. Right? I know it's that time of year. That's why Kaladar B'chutz La'aretz Kilo Oved Avodah Zarah. Anyone who lives in Chutz La'aretz, it's like you worship idols. Why? Because we know all about Oso Ha'ish. And we know about the background of Oso Ha'ish. And we shouldn't be thinking of Oso Ha'ish. Right? That man, Jesus. Right? But who comes from Bethlehem? Who comes from Beit Lechem? David HaMelech. Yishai. Beis Halachmi. Karvel Nafshi Yigala. Right? David HaMelech comes from Beit Lechem. So therefore, you know what Yaakov Avinu was hinting to Yosef in this pasuk? He's telling him, now that I've revealed to you that Ephraim and Manasseh, Kiruvin v'Shimon Yuli, I want you to know that there's going to be a Mashiach from you as the Bechor, and he's going to come from your Bechor, who's really Ephraim. And this Mashiach, you know why your mother had, I had to bury her, Ba'od Kivras Aretz Lavo Ephrasa, Ephrasi Beis Lachem. I buried her there because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted her to be Messiah, her descendant, who's going to be that Mashiach that's going to come right before Beit Lechem. That's why she's buried there. That she is going to be basically the one that enables her descendant, the Mashiach ben Yosef, to come forth and fight for the Jewish people. And that's why it's Ba'od Kivra Asar, it's Lavo Ephrasa, Ephrasi Beis Lechem, that before we get to Beis Lahalachmi, before we get to the one that's going to come from Beit Lechem, Bethlehem, before we get to the Mashiach ben David, first there has to be the Mashiach that comes from your mother, which is going to be through you from Ephraim. And that's why, yes, Rashi is telling him Pshat, but he can't share this with him until he reveals to him that Ephraim and Manasseh have what? Have the status of Shvatim. And not just any status of Shvatim, but who are Ephraim and Manasseh like? Reuven and Shimon. And they have the status of Reuven and Shimon. And you should know a lot of Parshas Vayechi. If you look at the uncles, you look at the Mefarshim, because it's the end of Yaakov's life, and Yaakov Avinu Lomeis, Yaakov Avinu Bnei Yisrael, he was Bechir Sheba Avos, the greatest of the Avos, Mitaso Shlema, his bed was complete. There's so many eschatological allusions here in Parshas Vayechi. So many different hints to the end of days in this week's Parsha, and different Midrashim and different Mefarshim, because we know that this is what Yaakov was doing. The end of Yaakov's life is ki'ilu, the end of the existence of Bnei Yisrael in this world, and Ma'isa Ava Simin Labanim. And this is in this conversation, Rav Schwab sees such a hint to the concept that there will be a Mashiach ben Yosef who will die, like Rachel, on the derech to Beit Lechem. Meaning as the precursor, on the derech to the descendant of David HaMelech raising up. So that is what he was hinting to over here. Okay, so that's a very fascinating idea, but I do believe, Cheryl will check the notes, there is another pshat. We once shared another pshat I saw in my notes, I think I shared it with you, why exactly it seems to be out of place. That this pasuk, you have a different notebook, I see. Yeah, I see. You don't have the notebook, the pinkus, the kuntris. Okay, that I'm going to write my sefer from. So instead, this pasuk, why is not at the beginning? Because it has to come after Ephraim and Manasseh, Kiruvim and Shimon, and Yaakov, you know, here is hinting to the secret that there are two Mashiachs. So there's a Mashiach ben Yosef and the Mashiach ben David. But we know the most famous part of this is, of course, the old switcheroo. And there's so many questions on the switcheroo, right? When he blesses Manasseh and Ephraim, he blesses Ephraim and Manasseh, right? Yosef brings them to Yaakov with Manasseh to Ephraim, to Yaakov's right, Ephraim to Yaakov's left, because, right, he wants Menashe, the older one, is going to get the right hand, the blessing of the Bechora, and Ephraim, the younger one, is going to get the left hand. And we know, what does Yaakov Avinu do? He just switches the hands. He switches the hands. And he gave rise to great, great, Chumash Charades games. You know, all you have to play Chumash Charades, just go like this. Oh, Parsh Vayichi, you know exactly what everyone's talking about, right? The old switcheroo. But the question is, why does he do it that way? Why doesn't he do it that way? Why does he do it that way? Why doesn't he just do what?
Switch
them. Say, no. Turn them around. Why does he dafka have to switch the hands? And what's furthermore, another question on this is when he actually gives them the bracha, Pasuk Chaf, he says, Vayivarchem, Bayom Hahu Lemar, he blesses them on that day saying, page 272, Mamish the last line, he blesses them that day saying, Becha Yivarech Yisrael Lemar, Yisimcha Elohim, Ke Ephraim Vichim Menashe, Vayasim Es Ephraim Lifnei Menashe. Right? I don't get it. He says, one second, it starts the Pasuk in the plural, Lashon Rabban, Vayivarchem. He blessed them, right? Ephraim and Menashe, saying what? Becha, through you. I understand. Which one? Becha is one of them, not both of them. Right? You see the problem? That Pasuk starts, again, Perek Mem Ches Pasuk Ha, 48:20, Mamash, the bottom of 272 in the stone, Chomish, Vayivarchem Bayom Ahu Lemar, he blessed them that day, saying, Becha, Yivarech Yisrael, through you, by you, the Jewish people will be blessed. Who's the you? And this is you, right? In English, there's no difference. You could be plural, but here it's clearly in Hebrew. Becha is lashon yachid. It's the singular. It's not the plural. So what's going on? So Rav Schwab has such a beautiful idea. Mamish, beautiful, beautiful idea. Gevalt, gevalt, gevalt. He says, really, they're both firstborns. Rav Schwab said they were both firstborns. You know what Rav Schwab was saying? Rav Schwab is saying that Yaakov Avinu, by not switching them, he said, no, there's a part of Menashe that is a firstborn. But there's a part of Ephraim that's also a firstborn. And it's just that Ephraim, his midah, is more important than Menashe's, but they're both firstborns. Vasmeint, what does that mean? We know that Yosef was an amazing, amazing figure. Yosef was a person that was able to be totally, totally immersed in this world, and yet he was a tzaddik yesod olam. He was like beyond comprehension. He was the guy that was able to be in the halls of power. He was able to be in the halls of finance on the highest levels, the richest people, most powerful people, and yet, Shem Shemaim Shagur Befiv, the name of God, the name of heaven, was always in his mouth. He was this incredible, incredible figure. And his two sons each took a side of him. Menashe, we know, what did Menashe do? Chazal tell us, Menashe was Yosef's chief of staff. Menashe was in the halls of government, in the halls of finance with him. Where was Ephraim? Ephraim was sitting and learning by the Zeta. Ephraim was sitting and learning by Yaakov Avinu. So Yaakov wanted to demonstrate that really, we need both of these. He said, we need the Menashe and we need the Ephraim. We need the Jew to be able to be involved in this world, but yet at the same time, we need what? We, of course, need Torah HaKadosha. And which is primary? The Torah. But he doesn't switch the sons because why? Because he still wants them. We're not rejecting Menashe. We're not saying Menashe is not important. We're not saying Menashe is even... We're not saying Menashe is a tafel. No, Menashe is also an Iker. It's not as Iker, it's also primary, but not as primary as Torah. And that's why Vayivarchem, he blessed them saying, Becha, in you, in the Lashon Yachid, in the singular, why? Because we need both of these in you, in one person. We need an Ephraim, and we need a Menashe. We need both of these in a Jew. We need the Jew to be able to be involved in the world, but yet, all is Hev Shem Shemaim Shogar Befiv. And I heard from Rav Michal Parnas, great Rebbe up in Heichal HaTorah, I heard from him today, Mamish, I was talking to him today, he said that this idea was what the Ksav Sofer said over at his son's bar mitzvah drasha. This was the bar mitzvah drasha he gave to his son, the Ksav Sofer. This bracha, Becha Yevarich Yisrael Yisimcha Elokim Kefraim V'chemenasha, that you should have both. You should be able to toil in Torah. You should feel comfortable in the halls of the yeshiva. That's where you sit. But at the same time, you have to be able to go out into the world. You can't lose it when you go into the world, the halls of finance, into the halls of government, into the halls of power. You have to be able to have really both of them. And that's pshat why he says, Becha, Becha. And so this is obviously a new meaning when, you know, the idea that this is how all boys are blessed, whether they're blessed Friday night this way or they're blessed Erev Yom Kippur this way, meaning the idea of Kefraim v'Chemenashe, many say that it's the first brothers that didn't want to kill each other, basically, right? The first brothers in Chumash that didn't want to kill each other, Mamish. That's also a good blessing, right? Anyone, you know, that's always a good blessing that you don't want siblings to kill each other. Gevalt, gevalt, okay? That's great, geschmack. But at the same time, when you're talking about what the ideal Jew is, you know, people would argue, oh, Kolel, oh, out in the world. No, we both, you know, we don't choose, you know, A or B. A, B, right? As Jews, we want the best of all worlds. And that's what that's what Rav Schwab is saying here. Obviously, again, the right hand is on Ephraim. Primacy, Torah. But we don't switch them. Meaning that's pshat. He didn't want to switch them because he said in there are many ways that Menashe needs to be on the right. That many times Menashe has to take that lead, and he has to know that he has to step up and take that lead. And that's what we want for our sons when we give them the blessing. That's essentially what Rav Schwab is saying, and that's evidently what the Ksav according to Rav Barnes, that's what the Ksav Sofer gave as a bracha to his son at his bar mitzvah. Okay? So that's the second thing. We know that we spoke about this on Shabbos. We spoke about this a little bit last week in this year. I don't remember if it was in this year or last week. But we certainly spoke about it on Shabbos. Rav Schwab has a beautiful Torah. We're not going to get into it so much. But the beginning of Perek Memtes, when he begins to bless the sons, Vayikra Yaakov El Banov, Vayomer Heyosfu, gathered together, Vayigid Elochem Esa Sher Yikra Eschem Vachris Hayamin, and you will see what will happen to you at the end of days. Hikavtsu Vashimu Bnei Yaakov. Gathered together and listen, the children of Yaakov, Vishimel Yisrael Avichem, listen to Yisrael, your father. So Schwab uses an interesting question. You see in the Pasuk, we're 274, Pasuk Aleph, Memtes, that it says, gathered together, and I will tell you what will Asher Yikra Eschem. Yikra Eschem, that's not the word that means what will happen to you. What will happen to you, how should that be spelled if it was a Lashon? What? If it was a Lashon and Mikra of what will happen to you, it should be spelled with a hey, not with an aleph. Eis asher yikra eschem ba'achris hayamim, yikra with an aleph means what? Called to you. What's pshat? If you're saying, and I'll gather together and I'll tell you what will happen to you at the end of days, right, gather together and listen. Okay, so that should be asher yikra with a hey. What is asher yikra eschem with an aleph? So if Schwab says that this is another allusion to the idea that Geula is when Jews gather together. Meaning, what's going to call to you at the end of days is Hikavtsu v'shimu b'nei Yaakov. What's going to call to you at the end of days is gather together. That's what's going to call to you, and that's ultimately what's going to bring Geula. That's what brings redemption. We spoke about that on Shabbos, that it is redemption. When Jews come together, you find Geula, and Rav Schwab Mamish has a lengthy Torah on it. And again, I spoke about it on Shabbos. I don't want to go much further into it, but it should be Pasha to us. And again, with Asar B'Tevis coming up, Aschalta de Paranusa, the beginning of Paranus, when the brothers Mamish were so broken that that they were willing to throw Yosef into that pit, to rip the coat, to literally sell him down the river. So we know that that's what we have to work on this week. That's a big avoda this week. That you know, we begin every day with the words of the Alter Rebbe, quoting from the Ari Azal, that the first thing we daven every day is Hinni Muchan Muzuman Lekabel or Hareni Mekabel Alai Mitzvah. It's a say shel the haftalarecha kamocha, right? That we begin every day by accepting upon ourselves the haftalarecha kamocha. And before we daven, and that's the beginning. I mean, a certain siddurim. I'll show you two of my siddurim. It starts. That's the first part of davening. Meaning, you say modani, you say the Netil Sadaim, some of the brachas, and right after, before any Motova, Hareini Mekabel Alai, Mitzvah Ase, Shelvi Ahavtel Recha Kamocha. Right, a reminder for us what our whole day is supposed to be about. That all of our avoda is supposed to be about bringing things together, giving to one another. That's really what's what should motivate us. And look, Chevra, you know, I'm happy to tell you and I'm scared to tell you. We're at Achras Hayomim. I'm happy to tell you and I'm scared to tell you we're at the end of days. I'm happy to tell you because it means I really believe Achakila B'chol Yom Sheyava, we've never been closer each and every day. But I'm scared to tell you because, you know, the Gemara and the end of Sanhedrin, we've learned this together before, says that there are going to be very scary things happening at the end of days. Scary things that I think we see happening. It doesn't necessarily mean physical battles. We've been through that. You know, there is a pshat that says Mashiach ben Yosef was killed already. There is such a pshat. Remember we just said there are two Mashiachs? I've seen written by Chasheva Rabbanim, they thought Mashiach ben Yosef was killed already. Where was he killed? Okay, maybe he was killed in a battle in Eretz Yisrael, maybe he was killed in Europe. It's very interesting. Mamash. Could be Mashiach ben Yosef came and was killed. And now we're just waiting for Mashiach ben David. Ben David Yavo v'Yigalenu. But we know that at the end of days is going to be very difficult to be a firm Jew, a believing Jew. And Rahman al-Itzlan, we know that how many millions and millions of Jews, God forbid, Rahman al-Itzlan, with great pain, are not connected to Hashem, and they're just so far away, and that's very, very sad, and that's the tragedy of Achras Hayomim. That's the tragedy of Achras Hayomim. You know, one night on candlelighting, we had my non-Jewish cousins stopped by to light neirs with us. Mamish, why did they stop by? Because she was in a cheerleaders competition in Toms River, New Jersey, and on the way back to Westchester, so they stopped at their religious cousins. You know, I mean, the grandfather, who was my mother's first cousin, was, you know, he stopped by and they came with it. I was like, Mom, some non-Jewish cousins, non-Jewish, like introducing my daughters to their cousin, who's all dressed up like a cheerleader with all her like, makeup and like, you know, like Rachel's age, like, well, night before is Rachel's bat mitzvah, that, you know. That's her cousin. This is your cousin. And they're showing us videos of the flips she was doing. It's like, wonderful, wonderful. But they were there, and the grandfather's mom was crying as we lit the nairs together. He was crying. You know? That's Achras Hayomim. That's Achras Hayomim. It's I'm happy to tell you we're in Achras Hayomim. I'm very scared to tell you we're in Achras Hayomim. But that's where we are, Chedra. And that's what Rav Schwab says is Geula. Geula is when Jews can come together. And of course, we know that that's one of the greatest nisyonos we have. And I don't know if you saw the video of Amiad Yisrael's parents talking from a press conference in the hospital. I urge you to go online. I saw it, I think it was Vosses Nayas or the Yeshiva World, a press conference of Amiad Yisrael's parents, Shira, her husband, talking about what happened. And how her husband said, you know, he said, you know, I just look in the microphones in front of me. The microphones themselves are from all parts of the Jewish people. You know, Arutsheva and the left-wing Chadashot. And, you know, and it was just, we've been embraced, smoli yamin, from right to left, we've been embraced. And, you know, that's what, yes, everyone just continue to come together. Exactly what we said on Shabbos from Rav Elio Meirav, the father of Yossi Cohen, that it shouldn't be darkness that brings us together, but it takes work. It takes work to really feel connected and to look at each other with love and to look at each other with a good eyes. And, you know, that's very important, avoda, very important avoda. Okay, I apologize. See, Sunday, I'm relaxed, Cheryl. Sunday, I have like five more things to go on. I'm going to go with one more because there's one that's like too good to let go of. Right? There's one, but really, I should say this to the men because the men I really scream at. You know, I once told you, well, some who are at Chal Shudas, you hear me scream, but Thursday night I scream, you know, off record at the men. But, you know, I've often said, I remember the first year I was teaching in Berea, they said, you're a Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael, give us Musar like the boys. Do you remember, Lana?
Yeah, remember? Like
three
people
left crying. Right. So all year, give us Musar like you give the boys. I really, what topic? So it was like Purim time. It said secular college. I'm like, you sure you want Musar like the boys, secular college? Do you remember? I'm sure girls left the class crying, hysterical. And another quarter of class was screaming at me at the top of their lungs. Another quarter of class was staring there like, you know, I said, okay, that's why you can't give women Musar like you can give men Musar. Right? So this is an idea about what Musar means. So again, I'm sharing this with you, that we all have to know this Yisod, but it's... It's meant where it can be accepted, okay? But we know that in this week's parsha, in giving the brachos, Shimon v'Levi achim klei chamas mecherosam. Mecherosayim. Besoda maltavo napshi, bekola maltechad kvodi ki va'apam hargu ish, ritzonam ikru shor, orer apam ki oz v'avrosam ki kashosa, achalkim b'Yakov afivtsem b'Yisrael. So Yaakov rips Shimon and Levi. He rips him. I mean, he also ripped Reuven. By the way, you ever wonder that's why Yehuda steps up to leadership? Because Reuven was rejected because of what he did with the bed of Yaakov, with Bilhah. And Shimon and Levi are rejected because of what they did to Shechem. So Yehuda's the next oldest. That's why Yehuda gets elevated. And that's why Yehuda sees himself in that role. He sees what happens to Reuven. He sees what happens to Shimon and Levi. He realizes, I have to step up. And Yaakov really rips Shimon and Levi to shreds here. And Achim, your brothers, the two of you, you're together, right? And what's interesting is we see that a lot of their destiny, the fate of these two Shvatim, really are very similar. Both of them wind up with very, very small populations. Very, very small populations. Neither of them really have their own chelek in Eretz Yisrael. But Rav Schwab says the reasons for these things are worlds apart. You know why Levi had small population versus Shimon? You know why Shimon had a small population? Because in the sin of Zimri, there was a plague that wiped out tens of thousands of Bnei Shimon. They lost tens of thousands in a plague. When Zimri, their prince, acted inappropriately with the Midianite princess, right? Levi, you know why Levi had a smaller population? Because they weren't made subservient in Egypt to the same degree. They were the priest caste. And in fact, that's why if you paid attention to Parshas Vayigash, there's a strange interlude how it tells us that Paro basically taxed everyone, took everyone's property, all their cattle, themselves as slaves, except for whom? Except for the priests of Egypt. And many explain the whole reason why the Torah tells us is to explain how there was a shevet of the Jewish people that wasn't enslaved in Egypt. Why not? Because Paro had a respect for the priests. And the Levim were seen as the priests of the people. So because they weren't enslaved, they didn't have the brach of a kasher yanu oso ken yebev v'chen yifrotz. The pasuk that tells us to the degree that they were made subservient and enslaved, to that degree they became more fruitful and much greater numbers. So that's why Levi didn't increase. But Shimon doesn't increase because so many died in the plague with Zimri. The reason why they don't have a chelek in Eretz Yisrael is that, right, Shimon, their nachal on Sefer Yeshua Perik Yud-Tes tells us, v'yinachalosam betoch nachlas b'nei Yehuda, like we're afraid to give Shimon their own place, we're afraid of what will happen to them, so really their chelek was subsumed in the chelek, in the portion of Yehuda, but why doesn't Levi get a portion? Levi's portion is, because the Pasuk tells us, because Hashem hu nachalosam, that God is your portion, and they get 42 cities throughout the land, 48 cities with the 6 Ari Miklat, and so God is their portion. That's why. So even though on the outside they seem to share fates, but they're really very, very different reasons. And ultimately we know the greatest dichotomy between the two Shvatim is ultimately in their leaders. The leaders of Levi are Moshe, Miriam, Aaron. Who's the leader of Shimon that we know about? Zimri ben Salu. That caused over 20,000 of Bnei Shimon to get killed. Zimri, this one who sinned publicly in such a horrific way. So Rav Schwab says that, you know, Yaakov Avinu refers to them as Achim Klei Chamas Mecherosem, refers to them as brothers, right? And we do see, as we said, they seem to follow a similar storyline externally in terms of the lack of inheritance, in terms of small numbers. But we see that the Pnimius Advarim on the inside, they're totally, totally split. Min ha-kotze ve-la-kotze, the greatest shevet to like the worst. What happened? So where does Rav Schwab say, what's the limud from here? The limud from here is how you take Musser. How do you take admonishment? He says, "Shnei ha'achim shamu Musser aviyem lefnei Moso." The two brothers, they both heard the same admonishment. the same mussar given to them, right? The same admonishment to Tochas Yaakov. The question is, what happened then? The Tochacha, the mussar of Yaakov, woke a spirit of tshuva in Shevet Levi, a deep spirit of tshuva. And it caused Levi to become zealous for God's sake, as we see by the Egel Azov, Mi Lashem Elai, Shevet Levi goes. And yes, they still have their sword without concern for themselves. It's for Hashem. They learn to channel their zealousness, to follow leadership. Unfortunately, Shimon Rachman Litzlan, isn't moved the same way. His Shevet isn't inspired the same way. Until he says, Sof Hadavar Nisgalgel, that Rachman Litzlan, that Pinchas comes from Levi, and he takes that kinna from God, using the sword to kill the leader from Shimon. He kills Zimri. That's what Pinchas does from Levi. And so Rav Schwab says, we see from here that Shimon and Levi, when Yaakov is mussaring them, achim, they're brothers. They're together in purpose. They're together indeed. And as we see, so much of Yaakov's bracha seems to be that they are mirroring one another. Except on the inside, for totally, totally different reasons. Coming from totally, totally different places. And what is that because of? When you hear mussar, how do you respond? When you hear mussar, what does it do? Does it crush you? Or do you say, you know what? As Shlomo HaMelech tells us in Mishlei, the Chacham loves admonishment. Because the Chacham wants to grow. I once had a Rebbe, he once said it's one of the most important midos to be able to hear criticism. Because if you can't hear criticism, you're stuck. I've often told you of, people that I admire, people with great spiritual aspirations who would ask people close to them, tell me what I need to work on. Tell me straight. And they say, the Vilna Gaon, beg the Dubna Magid, give me Musar, I need Musar. Who gives a Vilna Gaon Musar? Yeah, I'd be afraid to give the Vilna Gaon Musar. You say the wrong thing, lightning's literally going to come down. You know, and they say the Dubna Magid didn't like to give a Musar. But the Vilna Gaon would beg that, please, give me Musar. They say one of the wealthy Rothschilds, he would beg people that he would have great tzaddikim, gedolim, stay by him, and when they would leave, he would say, the payment that you could give me is you have to show me three things I can improve upon in my home. Three things I can improve upon in my home. Most of us don't want to ask anyone that question because, oh, what's it going to make me feel like? Oh, I'm... Chavra, we all have to remember with one of the greatest teachings of Rabbi Nachman. If you believe that you can ruin something, you have to believe that Eibishter can let you fix something. Or as Lahavdil Led Zeppelin says, there's always time to change the road you're on, right? There's always time, don't worry. You don't know Led Zeppelin? I'll tell you later. Okay, sure. So I'll tell you later. But you know that how important that is to be able to take to hear someone. And again, when someone's screaming at you, you know, how they give it over, you know, Shlomo HaMelech says, you know, sometimes you can't hear it because how someone's giving it over. But, you know, the great tzaddikim say important to be able to look for the nekudas ha'emes, look for that little bit of truth in whatever someone is saying. And that maybe there is something that can help you grow further and you can go to a different place. And so that's what, you know, Schwab is saying here, that we should seek out Musar. We should seek out people that can help us understand what we're doing wrong. Because what would we rather? We'd rather just keep doing the wrong thing, la'olam vaid, because then, trust me, we don't want that. We don't want to get to the olam emes and see that what we were doing wasn't emes, right? We should want to know what we can do better. And we ask Hashem, I want to do better. Give me the strength to do better. And because we know everything we do, Hashem is our partner. You should know. Let me say one more idea. Yeah, what? So it wasn't us, that's a good question. We know there were some bright spots, but there was the Tchunas HaNefesh. We know that the Shvatim weren't only about birthright, it was also about certain personalities that were carried. That's why Amun and Moav, for example, were not allowed to marry men from Amun and Moav, because we say there was a certain character trait that came in that nation, that would come through fathers, that was unhealthy. And so we see that in terms of the Shevet, there was something in the Shevet that they turned away from Musar. That's what Rav Schwab wants to say. Again, was it Shimon and then it was a breakdown from there? You know, it's a question how it happened. But you should know. You know what, okay, I don't have time. It's late. But there's about, you know, that Yosef. That, just one more. Okay, very quick. Perek Nun Pasuk Chav Beis. Vayeshav Yosef in Mitzrayim, Hu Be'ubeis Aviv, Vayechi Yosef, Mea Ve'eser Shonim. Right? And then it says, some more about Yosef's descendants. And then it ends again. Vayamas Yosef ben Mea Ve'eser Shonim, Vayechantu Oso, Vayusem Ba'aron B'Mitzrayim. So the question is, why in Pasuk Chav Beis does it tell us that he lived 110 years and then list about his family? And it tells us that he saw great-grandchildren. By the way, this is the makor, this is the source, that there is a minhag that in one family, a person should not be a sandak more than once in one family, except a great-grandfather. Because Yosef was a sandak for great-grandsons from one family. But again, most say you don't have to worry about them. Okay, but it's an interesting just trivia fact. But the shaila is, why does it say that Yosef lived 110 years, but then tells us about his family, and then he says, oh yeah, he died, he was 110. Why? Right? You hear the question? So listen to what Rav Schwab says. Half live a fella. Look at Pasuk Chaf. When the brothers come to Yosef, after they bury Yaakov, and they're afraid, right? And he says, don't be afraid. Ki asachas Elohim ani, am I afraid of God? Va'atem chashavtem alai ra'ah. You thought bad, Elohim chashavo letovah. God thought for good. L'man aso kayom hazeh l'achyos amrav. To be able to support so many. Va'ata al tira'u anochi achalkel eschem v'estabchem. Va'inachem osam v'yidaber elibam. And you don't be afraid, because I will sustain you and your children. And he comforted them and he spoke emotionally to them, and they connected in a deep way. And then the Pasuk says he lived there, and then he died 110 years. Why? So the Medrash says that it's a Gemara Sota that we see the fact that he died before all his other brothers because hinhig atzmo b'rabbanus. I hope it doesn't mean really Rabbanus, right? I say I went white before my brothers, right? They deal with yeshiva guys. I have a shul, right? So maybe that's a little bit of a difference. But what does that mean? That because he had a certain authority? So what's the danger in authority? So Rav Schwab says, look at the pasuk carefully. The next pasuk is, he lived in Mitzrayim and died 110. Why? What did he say in the pasuk before? How does he start pasuk chaf aleph? Valta al tira'u. Don't be afraid. What does he say? Anochi achal kel eschem. What does he say? I'm going to take care of you. Pasuk before he says, Hashem sent, don't worry, take care. So what should he have said here? Hashem. He says, Anochi achal kel eschem. I'm going to take care of you. That was another little slip of Yosef. Right? It's important that we understand where our mistakes are, and we work to fix them. We don't hide. We know, Ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov le'yech. The Shlomo Melech says, there's no one who's perfect. You're trying to be perfect, it's unhealthy, go to psychologist, right? As I've told you many years. Worked for me, it was great, right? You know, perfectionism is unhealthy. We don't try to be perfect. So that's why we're not afraid of making mistakes, and we're not afraid of learning from them and growing from them. And that's what Rav Schwab says, why Yaakov, Blas, Shimon, and Levi, Achim? But from that Musar, from that admonishment, they go very, very different directions. So we're supposed to look, the Rambam says, we're supposed to look at fast days as days of admonishment, but as days of tshuva. That's what Asar B'Teves is, according to the Rambam. There's some Rishonim who say that these are days of Avelos. They're just days of mourning. But the Rambam says they're days of tshuva. You have to do tshuva on Asar B'Teves. That's a day of admonishment from Hashem. And a day that we should do tshuva. So I hope everyone should be zocha to do tshuva. And we should be zocha that, as we said from the Chassam Sofer, that on Asar B'Teves it decides what Tisha B'Av is going to be this year. Bez Hashem, this Tuesday, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will decide that we'll be celebrating Yerushalayim come Tisha B'Av this year. Shkoyach.